Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Central Ohio is one hot real estate market, the hottest in the country in mid-April, according to Realtor.com. That's good for sellers who are getting more per square foot and selling sooner than ever, often in just a few days if the price and location are right. But the Central Ohio population is also growing every day, and demand has been pent up, especially among millennial first-time buyers who are dominating the market. Joining us is managing partner and real estate analyst at Columbus-based Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ann.
And president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Are we getting to be a broken record now? Is it just hot, 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 and there's nothing much else to talk about?
I don't really think so. I think in the beginning of the year, housing was a little slow. And it sometimes is
comparable.
It was a little slow. I do agree with your earlier comment. I tell you, in probably mid-March, it just took off like wildfire. And it is crazy busy right now. And good. Rob and I talked about this earlier. I still don't see, people have mentioned bubbles. I still don't see that because there's still not enough product. Not enough product on the market. We are seeing homes being bid up. So if the house was listed at 200, it may go for 225.
Right.
And some people put in their contract that if it goes up to 230, they'll make up the difference on the appraisal. So let's say if they're buying it for 225 and it only appraises at 215.
Right.
They're going to make up that $10,000 gap.
The seller.
The buyer's going to make up the gap.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to ask about that because a friend of mine just went through that with her daughter. They're like, well, they're telling us that they'll sell it to us, but making up. What does that mean?
So if the purchase price or the appraised value, the lesser of the two is going to be the start point. So if you go into contract at $200,000, but it only appraises at $190,000. Basically, if you still want to buy the house, you've got to make up that $10,000.
You've got to come up with $10,000 more dollars.
And then your down payment starts at $190,000 because that's the true value of the home. And that's what the lender is going to basically be lending on, is that.
Right.
So then you've got your down payment plus the $10,000. And that happens often. Sometimes it's even pushed into the contract. The buyer says.
That's what they're doing is putting it into the contract.
And we'll make up so much of a difference.
What do you think? What do you guys think about that? Is that a risk? Is it a calculated risk?
I definitely think it's a risk. If it's a short-term home for you, you're going to be there 5 years or less, you're probably not going to do very well. But if it's a long-term play and you love the area, and you're going to be there for a while, you'll be okay.
Okay.
As we said earlier, I just don't think there's enough homes on the market that's going to create this huge bubble.
And looking at the broader issue, Ann, the fact of the matter is we're not building enough houses to accommodate the household growth that we have in Central
Ohio. It's that affordable housing piece there.
Well, that's right.
Not just low-income housing, just even...
Well, that's right. And when you think about the fact we're not building enough housing to accommodate all the households that we have in Central Ohio, a lot of those units are being occupied by people that would have had lower incomes that would have occupied those units. So it's kind of a double problem for us right now that we don't have enough housing for moderate or high income households, but we also don't have enough housing for the very low income households because so many folks are occupying those units currently. So we've got a real problem and we're simply not generating enough housing units to accommodate all the growth.
Is there anything in history that instructs us at this juncture? What do builders do? Who makes the first move?
Well, there's a lot of discussion about that going on here in Central Ohio and also nationally. The BIA had actually asked us to take a look at the housing situation in Central Ohio. And what we're trying to convey to suburban areas is that we have to increase the density in these areas in order to provide for a lower cost housing option. Mm-hmm. And the intent of that report was to indicate how drastic the need is in Central Ohio for housing right now. So we have to find ways to get the density up and the cost down in order to accommodate the kind of household growth that we have going
multi-unit
on.
Multi-unit housing.
Both multifamily and single family. The fact of the matter is, and I think you might have heard Bob Schottenstein, the president of MI Homes, talk about the fact that we've got these giant side yards that we really don't need. We could put better housing, higher quality housing on smaller lots that would reduce the cost of that house and provide some of those housing units that we actually need.
Isn't this kind of the first time that I've been seeing this, that is a on the forefront? I mean, smaller houses.
The size is going down.
I think when I talk to people, people want more of an experience in life versus I have this big house and this big yard. And people want life. They don't want the house and the responsibilities that it comes with.
And there's another problem with that, Todd, also, and is the fact that us baby boomers are occupying our houses for a longer period of time. So we enjoy these houses. And the fact of the matter is many of the baby boomers occupy some of those giant 4,000 square foot homes that are going to be tough to sell in the future.
Absolutely.
So, not only do we not have existing product, but then the future product, we have to be able to design it for what people are interested in, and we're not doing that right now.
Because I think everyone wants to get to the point where they are around their amenities. And that's where the problem comes, because you know, people want that walkable communities. Well, those are hard to come by because there are very few there to begin with.
That's right. And that's what has put the high demand in places like Grandview and Bexley and Worthington and Clintonville.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the real estate market in Central Ohio today. My guest, Rob Vogt, he's a Columbus-based real estate analyst and managing partner for Vogt Strategic Insights. Todd Heltbringer is president of Heltbringer Mortgage Services. If you have a question or comment, I'm really interested in the millennial piece in this. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, a few years ago when we were talking, we talked about the millennials and we talked about what they wanted versus what was out there. And at the time, a few years ago, they weren't as interested in buying. They were fine with not getting hunkered down in a house and a mortgage and that kind of a thing. That's really changed quickly, hasn't it, Todd?
Yeah, I've had more people, Rob and I were talking about earlier, that have come to me that are just out of college, that are buying their first house. And some of them I'm meeting today are ones that in Clintonville, want to buy in Clintonville. And they've got the means to put down a down payment, which is, again, we've always said the millennial are as, you know, burdened with too much student debt,
right,
et cetera, et cetera.
But not all of them. There's a lot of them.
Correct. And there are some of them we've talked to earlier times that there's a lot of gifting going out because their parents have done so well that they want to get them in their first house, or they're either paying off their student debt or they're gifting them money for a down payment. But I see a lot of it. And again, you can get into a house. People still believe that you need 20% down. You can get in, if you're a first-time home buyer, with 3% down. 3% down, conventional financing. It's still a fantastic product for people.
For that first home.
Absolutely.
One of the things that we have to be careful here is not to simply indicate that this is a trend. There is clearly a desire among millennials to have some level of home ownership. But the problem is because there isn't alternatives in the marketplace for millennials to actually buy. They're kind of stuck in multifamily rental housing. And I think there's going to get to the point where they simply decide that, hey, this lifestyle is not the worst thing in the world to live in a multifamily rental apartment. And I think that's why one of the fundamental changes are occurring and right now in the marketplace is that we simply, because we don't have these products for people to move to, they're being stuck in apartments. And I use the term stuck. They're really not stuck. They enjoy the
amenities.
Except
that their money is they're not investing in anything.
Correct.
And that's what they're starting to think about.
I understand what you're saying, Rob, because again, there are some people that just can't be homeowners for whatever reason, meaning that not that they can't afford it, but they just don't want that responsibility with home ownership. So they do want that, you know, rental, maybe it's $1,500 a month, but then some of them come to me and say, I don't want to keep paying $1,500 or $2,000 a month and get nothing out of it.
Right.
And so you always have that flip side, but I think what the millennials love more than anything is being so close to so many different things. I think they're going to be there until they decide a lifestyle has changed, maybe have a family, et cetera.
I'm still wondering what we're going to do with those 400 square foot homes down the road when the
totally
baby
agree.
Boomers who occupy them.
4,000 square.
What did I say? 400. No, that would be
that's
me.
That's a micro unit.
4,000 square homes. Foot or 5,000 or 6,000 square foot homes.
That's a real issue right now, and you know, because lifestyles have changed, and we all know that we live in our kitchen and in our family room, and that's about it. And you don't need 4,000 or 5,000 square feet to live in, and I think millennials today are beginning to turn their back on those kinds of houses. So yeah, a lot of baby boomers are going to be stuck with some very big houses going into the future.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, but building them. They
right.
Well,
okay, let's talk. We have an email from David. What's the current cost per square foot to build a new home? I mean, why are they doing that? Because they make more money, right?
Well, it depends on the custom finish. Yeah.
But the finishes are really going to demand a higher price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be $200-$400 a foot, depending on what
finishes.
That finish level
and
is.
And finishes are something millennials care about.
Correct.
Absolutely.
I was willing to buy that first starter home I was a second owner of an 80-year-old house and I had needed a lot of updates, but I was willing to do that. I didn't care whether it was stainless steel appliances or not. That's changed.
That is definitely what they want now. I think they want more of an open concept.
Yeah.
Stainless steel.
Yeah. 2 decades ago, it was space. Everybody was buying space. But recently, it's quality. They're looking for that quality finish, the quality amenities, the quality appliances that you talked about, tile. Yeah. It's the interior finish that I think is more important, how livable that space is.
So can we say what a current cost per square foot is?
If you get into the road, maybe say 200 to be safe.
Yeah.
Because you can, as Rob said, you can go way over into the 400 and 500s.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then does that include the cost of the lot?
Right.
Location.
Right. There's a lot of things that go into that. But I think, 200 is probably a starting point. Mm-hmm. Consider that right now in Central Ohio, you can't buy a new house for less than $250,000. So that's not a very big house.
Mm-mm.
Harry in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Anna. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
I would like to share some insight. I am a millennial, and I own a couple of rental properties around Columbus. And the experience that I had so far in renting to HUD low-income housing is there is so much demand for the people that have these vouchers. At the same time, when you look at the city of Columbus with their land bank and with so many abandoned houses on the east side, right outside Bexley, there are so many opportunities. I feel the city can do a little bit more in encouraging the millennials to qualify to buy these houses if we can find some banking lenders or partners because if you look at it at the end of the day, they're not that expensive and it doesn't take a lot to fix and rent them. But there is so much demand as far as my experience. So that's what I just wanted to add.
You're just saying we need a lot more, the market needs a lot more people like you out there that it's willing to do that.
Exactly, some kind of incentive or some banks that would not look at 4 years of your employment history. Mm. As long as you have enough experience, you're credible, they can lend. Because if you drive down any street in the east side or on the south side or anywhere around Columbus, I bet you there are close to 4 to 5 abandoned houses just being sitting there, not doing anything, so...
Okay. Yeah. Well, Harry, thank you.
The difficulty comes with that is that having a bank step in and lend on something like that is a challenge. I mean, a lot of
it's
these
a
homes,
risk. And
it's a high risk. In a lot of these neighborhoods, the houses, if they're not deemed livable, you can't get financing on them. You'd have to almost go to a lender that would, this term is called hard money, where they're basically not Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or even FDIC. They're just their own entity.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll lend money so you can fix it up.
But at a higher rate, usually.
At a much higher rate. There's that risk.
And when the caller was talking about a millennial, that's a much riskier investment. And it's tough to get a lender to make a loan on that
kind of property. Well, that's what he's saying is, but if you can show you have other qualities that you bring to the table. But things have changed.
The other problem you have, especially with banks and talking to them, is that if you're surrounded in an area of homes that are depressed in value and say that number that the houses are worth $50,000, they're scared that it may never come back.
It just seems it's always going to be the big developers, though, the big, the rich people that get to gentrify an area and not, little people.
It is tough. It is a challenge because, again, as I said earlier, the banks just don't want to get in there and lend money in some of those areas.
But there is an opportunity out there for younger couples to look at an emerging area like the caller was talking about on the east side of Columbus to buy an abandoned house, put the sweat equity into it, and expect to get a fairly decent return in a couple of years. So it's not a bad strategy.
Harry, thanks a lot for that call. We are talking about the Central Ohio real estate market today and how to make it work for you. I'm particularly interested in that millennial piece. That's going to be the next big demand. It is right now. It's a big, huge demand among millennials. So stay with us and give us a call if you have a question, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is spring, and it's kind of that time of the year when people start putting more houses on the market and people start buying. But in central Ohio, nothing much is staying on the market for very long if it's any good and priced right. Still with us is managing partner and real estate analyst at Columbus-based Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, and also president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So is there a lot of demand right now for people like our earlier caller, who wants to invest and rent? Is that a thing right now, or are the prices going up now so much?
I was going to bring that up as a potential strategy for a younger person, is that if you're an apartment renter and you want to be in a place that's walkable and close to employment and shopping and restaurants, not a bad decision would be to go into one of those deteriorated neighborhoods and pick up a property like that and begin to build some equity through some of the, you know, reinvestment into that neighborhood. So that way you could be a renter and homeowner at the same time, and potentially could be a strategy for that long-term investment.
How does that change the mortgage situation, Todd?
Well, I mean, if you're going to go into a neighborhood, most of the time you're going to probably have to pay cash. Cash, okay. Fix it up, and then come back. And a lot of lenders, after a seasoning period of time, meaning once you own it and fix it up, you get it stabilized. Then after 6 months, they can usually do a cash out refinance. Mm-hmm. Then they'll get their equity out. They'll put a mortgage on the property. A lot of them then repeat.
Okay.
Go on to the next property and do the same thing. It's just getting that first one under your belt. I mean, a lot of lenders, if you went through Fannie Mae, they'll let you do, you know, 9 rental properties through them, plus your own house. So, but then some people get big enough, we'll have to go to commercial lenders.
Uh-huh.
And that's what, you know, we do a lot of things. But the thing I was mentioning when you said about the rental real estate, what we've seen a lot on my commercial side of the company, that rental real estate stuff, the values have gone up so far on what people are paying for 4 units, 2 units, 8 units, that the rents haven't followed yet. That's the problem that the commercial side of the industry is coming with, that rents haven't followed suit. And I don't know.
Yeah, in spite of all the headlines, our rents aren't quite as high as other Midwest communities. So it's kind of surprising when somebody sees
it. Why do you think that is?
I think it's just that we had so much supply a couple of decades ago that we were kind of depressed for a while in terms of rental rates, and they're now starting to come up at this point. And we get into communities today where they're easily 100% occupied with a waiting list, and we still don't see people raising rents. And part of the reason is that managers don't want to have to deal with turnover. They like the fact that they've got a fully occupied project, so they're not going to raise the rents to encourage somebody to take a move out because it costs money to get that unit ready to rent again. Mm-hmm. So,
I was surprised. We were talking off air about the occupancy rate downtown.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, downtown is about 96-97%
occupancy.
It is. Well, it reflects what lifestyles are interested today in, and that's walkable, close to sporting events, close to employment, close to restaurants. And that is going to be one of the reasons it's going to be tough to get people to move out of downtown into suburban areas. It's not going to happen because of lifestyle choices.
And you said the rent was 15 to 18?
Yeah, easily.
That's a one bedroom, as you said. One bedroom, $1,500 to $1,800.
Wow.
Donna in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Ann Fisher. It's Donna McGavro.
Hi, Donna. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and it's really strange that I have you on here because I have been seeking to sell my home, and I live in North Linden, okay, in a really awesome nook, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, the house that I live in was my grandmother's house.
Yeah.
When they built these homes, there's only 7 of these homes. They're big bricks. You know, my house is a 3-bedroom, 2.5 bathroom, you know, over 2,200 square feet home. I have a double lot, right?
Wow.
And I was talking to the person that answered the phone. I said, not only do I have a awesome old home that's like 90 years old, right? And I've completely, you know, when I bought it, I had to put in, you know, new electric, new plumbing, all that stuff. I have tile. I have hardwood floors, a lot of the upgraded stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I personally don't have stainless steel refrigerator or stove.
You know.
But in my kitchen, I have a working wood-burning fireplace that you're not going to find in any.
So it sounds like heaven to me. What's the problem?
So the problem is that when I am going to sell the house, my house is surrounded by these, you know, post-World War II homes, you know, that are only, that people are only getting, you know, like maybe, I don't know, between 85 and...
Donna, we lost you. Okay. So I think Donna McGavero, the great singer-songwriter, Donna McGavero, but what... So we lost her, but I know what she's saying.
Talking about the value of the neighborhood.
Right. That the house, the surrounding houses are dragging it down, and she can't get the kind of price that she was hoping to get, I think.
Yeah, she can't get her money out of
it. But, you know, that kind of situation exists in German Village and, and Old Town East and the Short North. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, $800,000-$900,000 houses that are surrounded by $180,000 houses. So it's a mixed. It's
you just got to find the right owner. It just, it narrows the marketplace
for
you a little
bit. And it'll be a little bit of a challenge for her to probably sell that house and sell the amenities that it offers. But I think it sounds like a great house that she should be able to sell.
And one of my producers is chiming in here and saying that Donna was saying that she's, because she lives on one side of the highway versus the other, her house is devalued. Is that a thing?
It does happen. And I, you know, back on the project that she is, you'll be, whatever you're surrounded by, unfortunately, that's what, how you'll be judged. And I tell you, I hate to say that, but if homes in that area are selling for $200,000, whatever that number may be, and your house is spectacular, it should be worth $500,000, that's going to be a struggle. Because if someone goes and gets financing, the appraiser is going to look in the immediate area, and that's what will happen.
What the comparables are.
One quick comment about North Linden, though. I think that is becoming an up-and-coming neighborhood
now.
And it will.
Don't move.
No, it really is. It you know, people have identified the fact that there is some real value up there and the fact you can get a reasonably priced home close to a lot of amenities. So I see North Linden as an emerging neighborhood right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our spring real estate show. My old friends, Todd Helbringer, president of Helbringer Mortgage Services, and Rob Vogt, a managing partner and the Columbus-based real estate analyst firm of Vogt Strategic Insights. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Natalie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Ann. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So my husband and I, I'm 28 and he's 30. We bought our house about 4 years ago in North Eastmore, right outside of Bexley. And we got a great price. We love it. We did the 3% down payment. But we're at this point now where we have a three-year-old and the cost of private school and daycare is around $12,000 a year on the low end. Mm-hmm. And we really want to move to like Gahanna or just outside in the suburbs, but we are priced out. So I'm, you know, kind of at the point where I would consider renting in those areas just so I could not have to pay the school fees that I'm paying.
So to get into a better school district?
Pretty much. Like our house, we're really lucky. It's gone up in value. We're happy with where we are, but we would really like to actually move out a little bit into the suburb. And there's just really nothing at that amount
that you can afford.
Are you priced out? Are you priced out because of the value of the home? Is that what you think?
That you don't think you can get the money out of it to move on?
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, the value of our home has gone up quite a bit, so that's great for us. But we're still just kind of just below being able to afford the houses that are, you know, in a little bit more school areas that are desirable.
We hear this a lot. The schools affect it. How much, I mean, what are you looking for in a district? Have you gone to the local? I mean, you know where your kid would go if you stayed. And is it just Columbus City Schools that bothered you?
Yeah, actually, my mother-in-law worked for Columbus City Schools right down the road from us for many years, and she put all of her kids through private school. So we've just we've heard some horror stories. We know some people that just kind of don't want to be in the exact area we are, and it's a shame because I would be happy to use the public schools. I went to Worthington Schools, so I'm a fan of public schools myself, but I got really lucky.
Rob Vogt, chime in here on the value of a school district and what it means to a city like Columbus.
She's bringing up a lot of points that, you know, if we could ever solve the quality of school issues, you know, city of Columbus would be booming in terms of housing, people staying in the neighborhoods. My wife and I didn't have children, but we've lived with folks in Victorian Village that went through the lottery system with the city of Columbus schools, and they seemed to be very satisfied. The kids turned out great. They dealt with it. I don't know. It's a real challenge. And before they make that decision to pick up and move, I would really fully explore what the alternatives are within the community. I mean, $1,000 a month sounds like a lot of money for private schools, but, you know, if it's going to cost you an extra $1,800 on a mortgage payment, you know, maybe staying where you are isn't the worst idea in the world. So I would fully explore the school issue before I made that drastic decision of
really
selling the house.
Really crunch the numbers,
yeah,
and particularly
yeah,
a place that you love.
That's right. That's right.
Gahanna and, you know, the suburbs are going to be very different.
Different, right.
Super different. Natalie, good luck with that. Anthony in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
So,
are you there? Okay, we're going to try to get Anthony back. I don't know what happened, but let's work on that. Okay. Anthony, let's see. In the meantime, we have Victoria in Columbus. Hi, Victoria.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a general question. I'm thinking about retiring early when I turn 60 in a few years. And I wanted to know about if I wanted to purchase some sort of rental property, should I think about doing more commercial or maybe just a home just to supplement my income?
Well, I guess, you know, down payment may come into play. So if you go, you can still go through Fannie Mae if you buy something that's four units or less, and that would help supplement your income. And I would also do this prior to you retiring. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when you retire, we're just going to use your pension, and then ultimately if you get Social Security, et cetera. So definitely do this sooner than later. But commercial, when you mention commercial, that's going to be if you purchase more than five units. And you can get probably some nice transactions, you know, four units or less.
Okay. Todd, what about her using a line of credit from her current house? Is that something you'd suggest?
Well, I say a lot of people do that if they're short on the cash. They'll use their home as an equity piece and pull that money out and push it down onto the rental property. You could do that.
When you do this kind of investing, though, there's got to be an equation out there for what are you going to have to put into it? You're going to have to maintain it. You're going to have to take care of it.
And so that's a great question. So I think a lot of times I tell people when they're buying something as a rental property, if you're not going to manage it yourself, you know, that's where I think you do much better if you can manage it yourself, because you're going to look at probably, you know, 6% management fee. And if you're not handy, then you have to kind of hire everything else done. You have to get into an area that really pays a nice premium in rent unless you can do some of these items yourself. Because if you're just going to be an absentee landlord, I bought something, just forget about it and have everything else done, a lot of your profit will be absorbed into that.
I hope that helped, Victoria. You know, I talk to a lot of people who think, you know, they're going into retirement and they're thinking, I'd love to find a duplex that I could buy and take care of. A lot of the duplexes that are out there for sale are not very nice. I think as they're thinking more of the Clintonville duplex,
right. They're
just not out there anymore.
No, that's right. A lot of those have already been scooped up. And the other piece of the equation, Todd, is figuring out how much rent can you get, how much income can you get. And if you can't obviously cover that nut that you've got to cover, it may not be your best investment choice.
And go back to your even earlier comment about how landlords get somebody in there and then it's kind of like, don't call me, I won't call you, I won't raise your rent. I look at that philosophy, sometimes doesn't make sense to me because you're not keeping up the owner. You're not keeping up with higher taxes, higher insurance.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Yeah.
And you say, well, but I don't want to disrupt him and he or she move.
Although if you do it very incrementally, if you do it smart,
thank you.
Yeah. You know, just 20 bucks a year.
Exactly.
30 bucks. I mean, whatever.
It keeps up with everything. But yeah, just say, don't call me. I won't call you. Then when you get into the place, it's totally
a dump.
Destroyed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Then you still have the $10,000 you have to update everything with. So,
Anthony, you're back. Hi, Anthony.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So I'm a millennial and an agent and an investor in the Columbus area here. And it's been interesting because it seems like as Columbus has gotten a lot more press in the national media as far as real estate is concerned, that we're getting a lot more outside investors, especially in these areas that you guys have been talking about as far as North Linden or maybe even the Southwest side. And I'm curious what impact that's going to have on prices overall. I mean, obviously driving it up, but a lot of these people don't seem to realize what all is involved in managing a rental property. And seem to think that owning one or two is going to make them some kind of serious money when in reality it's a pretty incremental thing. And I'm curious if we're going to see a lot of those properties back on the market in the future.
There have to be a lot of younger people in particular working out in California, making a ton of money, but still not making enough money to seriously invest there or buy a house there that want to burn it somewhere.
Some of my big investors are from California, Silicon Valley. They come to the Columbus market. Now, their interest is more buying larger projects. I would say 8 units on up to apartment complexes.
Hmm.
They always have to come in with a management company. So part of what my performer when I work with these investors is that I'm not going to let you manage something 2,000 miles away. That is a ticket for disaster.
As somebody who's loaning the money.
Exactly.
Okay.
You need to have a local property manager. But a lot of those ladies and gentlemen out there just have big incomes. They can't invest in California. It's too expensive. And I think Columbus is a great market for that.
Yeah.
And they're getting some great values on some of these apartment complexes.
But nothing worse than a absentee landlord if they don't take
care
of things.
I won't do it. That is something. I think that's a deal killer for me.
Yeah. Anthony, thanks a lot for that call. 614-292-8513 is the number. If you have a question or comment, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about Columbus and Central Ohio real estate today with Rob Vogt. He's managing partner and real estate analyst at Columbus-based Vogt Strategic Insights. Also, the president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. If you have a question or comment about real estate, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. When you are in, you know, when we were talking to Donna McGavero earlier and we talked, she's got a particular kind of a house. There's going to be a narrower market for it. I learned that when we had a house with an acre up in Delaware Township. I assumed the market would be the same. It automatically narrows. There's just automatically. What does that suggest to you as far as when it comes to finding a real estate, a realtor? What kind of realtor to find that's going to focus on that versus just the masses?
I think that points to the importance of interviewing your realtor and making sure that they have that specialized knowledge to know about that unique property.
How you tap that market.
Yeah.
I would say throughout the years, you probably received mailers in your area that realtors have sold homes in the vicinity. That'll give you an idea of where to maybe start.
Okay.
But I think definitely finding the niche market and who your actual buyer will be
is
going to be key.
Samantha in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good, good. So I have a question. I purchased my home, and as a condition, I bought the house next door, which was his rental property. I couldn't find a good tenant, and I ended up fixing a lot of stuff. And finally, I got a really great tenant in the house, and I decided after about 2 years of her being really consistent and being good, I decided to go ahead and sell her that property. And just this past month, I paid off my house and the rental property after 4 short years. And me and my partner are considering purchasing more homes.
Oh, now you got bit by the bug. Okay.
Yes. But the problem with that is, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The problem with that is we're in an area that is still really depressed in northeastern Ohio. It's aging, and we don't know if it's the best option. So just wanted to get your guys' advice on what you think we should do, or if we should move out into different areas and purchase there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of that depends on the economic growth that's going on in that community. And we've all heard the stories that, Central Ohio is what is driving the success of Ohio itself. And taking a close look at job growth and job creation is one of the things that you should do as part of your homework to find out what is going on there and where is our economy headed towards. If like many places in Ohio, we have a rapidly aging household base, and those are folks that are unlikely going to occupy new housing or new apartments or new rentals for that matter. So I would take a very close look at the economy, see where it's based, and see if there's any job creation going on that's going to stimulate new household growth that's going to bring people to that area.
Yeah, and you were successful the first time, so just be more picky this time. You have more time to take and look at the areas, make sure it's going to be a good investment for you.
Wow, paid off in 4 years.
Yeah,
yay you, Samantha. Email from Brenton. I'm interested in what your guests know or think of Nationwide's development near the Parsons Avenue Livingston intersection and how that will affect the south side of Columbus. Of course, we're talking about Nationwide Children's Hospital. It looks fabulous over there. Wow.
Just talk about job growth before. Those are kind of jobs that are going to be concentrated in that immediate area that's going to want housing close by, because we all know the trend is to be close to where you work. Cut down on commute time, and it's going to stimulate new restaurants and new places to go, entertainment options. I think it's only going to be a positive for the south end of Columbus. And we've talked about Parsons Avenue emerging as one of the next great commercial strips. In fact, it already has.
It was in its heyday, It's coming back.
That's right. It's coming back very quickly. And I see just nothing but positive things going on in that area around the hospital.
It kind of makes you wonder what took them so long. I mean, it was sort of this island out there for a long time.
Well, Nationwide. It was, but Nationwide made the commitment to expand the hospital, which they did, and that, I think, is one of the things that prompted that. But when you looked at the amenities that Parsons Avenue offered, a stable housing for the most part, comparatively speaking, close to German Village, close to downtown, it had a lot of the amenities that I think a lot of folks are looking for in a close-in neighborhood, and I think it just makes sense that area is going to emerge as a desirable place to live.
Right. Now, has there been a tipping point as far as how the money lenders are seeing it?
No, I mean, there's nothing direct that we see on that. I mean, every neighborhood that we would lend on would just be, what's the area doing? I mean, what are homes selling for? And as long as we can verify the comparables and people have the down payment, then we have, that's fine. The lending is not a problem at all.
What are you thinking about when that moment's going to come where going back to the 4,000 square foot houses, what's going to happen? I mean, what year do they think that that's going to? I know people are figuring that stuff out by now.
Well, you think that the oldest baby boomers now are, 72, 73 years old at this point. There are retirement decisions coming up, and folks that have enjoyed their house for 25 years now are thinking about selling and moving to something more maintenance-free.
Are you ever seeing like a Golden Girl scenario out there for more people?
You know, I do, actually.
Older people living together when they were younger.
Yeah. I see the potential where an older person could have a bedroom that can be locked off. They have a caretaker who prepares meals and does light housekeeping, drives them to appointments. The one wild card in all this, Anne, is this whole driverless car environment that lessens the importance of being outside of your house. Mm-hmm. That you could stay in your home, call on a car, take you to groceries, or even now we have groceries on demand. So that is going to be an interesting situation to keep an eye on. But I believe that there will be houses out there that become rooming houses, large houses become rooming houses where people occupy a bedroom.
Is that going to require any kind of zoning changes?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Communities are going to they're going to fight tooth and nail for something like that.
Until maybe they see, wait a minute, this is going to keep. Yeah. I mean, there's places.
Well, that's right. And, we hear the term shared housing now that's coming along. Mm-hmm. It's even amongst younger adults. And I could see the potential where there might be big houses out beyond 270 that becomes a shared housing environment. But again, it's going to take a lot of convincing of suburban officials to accept that kind of housing concept.
But I still go back to that. I mean, we live up in Powell. They are still building these ginormous houses. And I look at that, I'm going, oh my gosh.
With five bedrooms, four baths.
Exactly. If I go back to, as these people age, and let's say they do have a 4,000 square foot house, the upkeep, that baby boomer is not going to be capable of keeping up with the upkeep without extra income coming in.
Nor does a millennial want that kind of house to upkeep.
The acre lots and all that becomes with that. I agree with you. I think people want a life experience, not the house experience.
Right. And that has completely changed from us baby boomers.
Yeah. I tell all my clients, do not live for your house. You will be miserable. Enjoy the experience.
I know that.
Justin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Ann. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to touch real quick again. You guys were just talking about Nationwide Children's Hospital and that area. My wife and I actually last summer, we just purchased our second home. We lived out in the suburbs. We had a big house. We bought a newly renovated house in Southern Orchards. And I just wanted to encourage people who may be looking for a place to come back downtown. The neighborhood is amazing, and it's one of the last places in town, I feel like, that has that kind of old Victorian brick building, that kind of housing stock that isn't, super, super expensive. And also, I just want to touch on Children's Hospital has been doing a lot of grant work, too, in the area to make sure that people who are living in the area now can improve their homes and stay in their homes instead of the area just becoming completely gentrified, which is part of the reason why my wife and I wanted to move into that community. But it's a really great, well-established community. There's tons of stuff going on there now. And I thank you guys for talking about it. I don't think it gets really enough in town. But I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you, Ann.
Okay. Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. It really has some great amenities. I should have mentioned the Old Orchard neighborhood. It really is an emerging neighborhood.
Well, describe where that is.
It's just
it's
south of 70, near Livingston Avenue, east of the Children's Hospital, and
east of Parsons.
East of Parsons, correct?
Yeah.
So. You know, it's got a lot of amenities. I mean, talk about a great location. I mean, it's just fabulous. And the great thing is, as these neighborhoods emerge, then things are following it, like coffee shops and brew pubs and restaurants. And, they just become more and more desirable.
How valuable is it when a neighborhood is distinguished by being in Italian Village or being distinguished by being in Old Orchard or that kind of a thing?
You mean in terms of identity that it gives it?
How does an identity like that, does it give it just cachet or is there,
It gives it cachet and value.
And value.
Value. Because, again, there's pockets of areas. So you can't say, I have a house in Columbus. They're all going to be appraised the same.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Every area has its own value. And that's what appraisers look for, is staying in that immediate area. Like the one caller said, I was on the, quote, wrong side of the bridge.
Or, yeah.
I mean, that does happen. The wrong side of the street, et cetera. There are different values.
Well, and there's also a perception in a name as well. I think we might all remember when East Franklinton, now the most desirable place in the city to live, was called the Bottoms for such a long time.
Absolutely.
It had a connotation associated with it. So I think a name has a lot to do with it. I think the Hilltop has struggled a little bit with an identity because of what the perception is of the Hilltop neighborhood. So, yeah, it has a lot to do with it and has a lot to do with its own identity.
Hmm. And so for residents, there's Ganther's Place in South Columbia or over by Livingston and Parsons, too. And that started years ago where they started to regenerate the neighborhood with gardening.
Yeah. My wife and I bought our first house in Italian Village in 1983. And one of the things that attracted
pioneers.
Us. Yeah. Well, what attracted us was that there was a core group of neighbors that got together in a regular neighborhood. And not only did you have the identity of Italian Village, but you also had this core group of neighbors to create a sense of neighborhood. And, that's so important to be able to promote an area that you have this sense of neighborhood. It's one of the things that apartment managers try to do with their own apartment project is create a sense of neighborhood.
A community.
A community, because that's going to get people to stay there for a longer period of time and make them feel a lot more comfortable where they live.
Safe. Yep, I agree. Good point.
Chris and Galena, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ann. Great topic. My husband and I have a log home on 2.5 acres in Delaware County, and we're the baby boomer generation, and it's a large house, and we're, considering selling, and I wonder what the rural market's like.
Hmm. Well, I mentioned earlier I had a place up in Delaware Township, too. What I learned was it's a different market.
Mm-hmm. Definitely different. I mean, that with 2.5 acres, you're still going to find a different person that's going to want to live there than versus in a suburb. I mean, absolutely. I think it's getting the right.
If doesn't everyone want 2.5 acres to mow?
Or trees all around you? Absolutely.
Raking.
But I think if she's thinking about moving, is getting with that right realtor that's up in that area that can market it, because there are plenty of people that want that setting.
Yeah. Just have to find them.
Just have to find them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's key to it, is to find that person who can specialize in that kind of property, to find the right buyer for it. Yeah. Because they're going to have buyers in their pockets looking for that kind of property. So it's really critical to get the right realtor in that situation.
And now's a great time with weather changing. I mean,
yeah, it's a pretty time to be looking at houses.
No leaves to rake. No leaves
to rake. Chris and Galena, thanks a lot. That's a good question. We're usually looking inward and outward. There is still a market there. This is a good time of year in town to be selling a house because of what things look like. How much does curb appeal matter?
I think it's huge.
Oh, I do too.
I think if nothing worse than driving into a neighborhood that you want to be in, and all of a sudden you see crappy house, crappy yard, crappy whatever, that deters from the energy. It has to.
Plus, with the lifestyle preference that millennials have today, where they want something pristine, it's got to be.
Where did that come from? HGTV or what?
Well, I think that had a lot to do with it.
Whatever happened to getting your starter house? And
roll up your sleeves and clean out the basement.
Yeah, rip up the flooring and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I know I sound bitter, but go ahead.
It was the parent. The parents did this to them.
You don't have to do that. I'll take care of that. We'll have somebody come in and have somebody do that for you.
Yes.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
But we've all heard, to sell a house, clean out all the personal items.
Correct.
Get rid of the clutter. Show
Make
how clean
it, neutral.
It is.
Right.
One of the articles I read to prepare said typically people are spending $5,000-$6,000 just to get their house ready for market. And some friends of ours, I don't know how much they spent. They didn't tell me, but they had the whole house repainted. Now, they sold the house without barely even putting it on the market. Mm-hmm. It was in Worthington, blah, blah. But still, they repainted the whole house.
Sure.
And they took out most of the furniture.
I think that's important. But I guess also maybe following the lead of your realtor, having he or she come in and tell us exactly what you think you need to do. But listening to the professionals. But I think decluttering is huge. I always believe in having a home inspection or whatever, making your house show strong. Nothing worse than having an inspection. And all of a sudden they come back and we want this fixed, because then all of a sudden the price goes down and down and down. So I think making your house so people remember it, it's clean, less clutter. I love it.
And Todd, also having a pre-inspection done.
Yeah.
I think some realtors, I'd like to get their opinion on what they feel about that. I think it's good because then you can have that on the table. People can review it. They're going to get their own inspector.
You can also tick off some things too before.
Yeah. And that way you've already fixed these items if there are items, but then have it that, hey, I'm showing you wide open. Here's what my house looks like. I've already inspected. You can have it inspected. I'm sure you want to, but this is what I've dealt with already.
And what's the price of a pre-inspection? Do you have any
idea?
I'd
say probably $350, $400.
Okay. That'd
be well worth it. It's like, I always call that cheap insurance.
Yeah.
Because if there are issues, you can get it fixed. Or if someone's coming to me and wanting to buy a house, they said, I'm going to waive my inspection. I'll be like, well, let's think about this. For $400, that's pretty cheap insurance to find out if everything's in working order for you.
Yeah.
Everything's in the seller's pocket right now, but.
Correct.
Any cautionary tales for sellers right now where it just seems too easy? Anything to be careful about?
Unless the market, and we have a lot more product on the market, it's going to be a seller's market.
Okay.
I mean, there are
multiple
offers.
That as but be careful that you sell so fast and then you have nowhere to go.
Right.
That I've heard about.
And we've talked about this in previous shows. The fact is, we do have hot markets like Grandview and Bexley and Worthington and so on, but there are also some softer markets where the prices aren't quite as high. And, you really, again, it gets back to a realtor who specializes in that area and is able to overcome some perceptions of what may be a negative location. So there are values out there. There are some house values out there. They just simply aren't in the right location with the right school district, and they have a certain perception. So we just have to be real careful about that.
Well, Rob Vogt, thanks so much for joining us to talk about it. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, man.
It's Rob Vogt. He is managing partner of the Columbus-based real estate analyst firm Vogt Strategic Insights. Also with us, Todd Helpbringer. Thanks so much, Todd, for joining
us
today.
Enjoyed it.
Todd Helpbringer is president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. And thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks for your great questions and your calls and your emails. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.